Hey guys, this is Eddie McClintock. I play Special Agent Pete Latimer on Warehouse 13. At least I did before they canceled us. Shh. And you guys are listening to Paul, Ian, and Matt on the McSauce podcast. Check it out. What's up?
Welcome to episode 346 of the McSauce Podcast.
God damn it!
Welcome to episode 347 of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Hello.
And Matt Cassell.
Hello.
It is Monday night, November 16th. Shout out to our good buddy, Brian Shapinski. Tonight, we are going to talk a little. We're going to wrap up Pulp Fiction. I finally watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We're going to do a little Mando Minute and talk episode 3 of The Mandalorian. And then Matt's going to regale us about new details of what George Lucas's sequel trilogy would have been like. So if you've got a fucking Woody for Star Wars, this is the episode to listen to. But before we start out with Woody's for Star Wars, we start out with hard-ons for housekeeping.
Oh, get your thick throbbing meat. To social media to check out the McSauce podcast.
Yikes.
In all of our, at all of our different venues that we entertain you on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube. Check us out all the various places. Listen to our show any place that podcasts are listened to, be it Spotify, Stitcher, Apple iTunes. You can send us feedback to said Facebook, said Twitter. We like to engage with our fans. And we also have a Patreon. If you laid 5 of your hard-earned dollars down, we will give you 2 exclusive episodes every single month. A lot of the time, we're trying to branch out and do some different stuff than we normally do on the main show. We've been doing some video game talk. We take requests. If you are a first-time subscriber, we will send you a survey that will help us construct a show for you. You put on the survey what you'd like to be featured on your episode, and we will oblige you with a special personalized episode. So, go to Patreon, type in MCSOSS, and you can check out the exclusive content that we have there. We've been trying to keep up on that, and hopefully we'll have some more episodes coming up pretty soon.
They are in the hopper. We are getting them ready to go.
We're cooking them up.
So earlier in quarantine, like I've been watching, trying to watch. New movies, a lot of horror movies I haven't seen, and also a lot of like classic-ish movies that I haven't seen. I recently watched both Aliens movies, but earlier in quarantine I started what Ian termed as Pulp Fiction, where I went through the entire Quentin Tarantino catalog, and like I was running at a pretty good clip, and then like there was a big break between what was the last one? Django? No, Hateful Eight, and then. I finally watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Its runtime really turned me off of it. Like, Ian, you let me borrow the Blu-ray. It was sitting on my coffee table, and every time I'd look at it, it would be like, what a commitment. And I understand. I don't need to watch it.
Fear of movie commitment.
I could break it up. I did wind up watching it all in one sitting, all the way through, and I thought it was very good. Like I briefly told Matt before we started recording, I don't think 2/3 of it had anything to do with the final third, but it was cool. It was entertaining. A lot of stuff in there was entertaining. But the crux of the story for me was how Cliff and Leonardo DiCaprio's character thwart the murder of Sharon Tate in the end. And like
it's like 2 hours of setup for that last 15
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, like watching through all of this stuff about like what's DiCaprio's character called? What's his name?
Off the top of my head, I don't know. Go ahead and vamp.
Watching like his story and like how he's, you know, huge 50s actor, and now he's kind of like falling out of favor, and he's like, you know, really, you know, wrapping up the end of his career, and you know, Cliff's career's already sort of wrapped up because he's just been DiCaprio's stuntman the whole time.
Rick Dalton.
Yeah. Cliff Booth has been Rick Dalton's stuntman the whole time, and their careers are both coming to an end. But it really has nothing to do with the one night where they kill people in their house for home invasion. Like, none of the setup has anything to do with, like, with the end.
Yeah, I think it's just a love letter to, like, early 60s Hollywood. It really, it's an excuse to do some alternate history kind of stuff. Yeah. But you're right, it doesn't have anything. Now, does that make it any less entertaining? I liked rolling with Rick and Cliff and seeing all that stuff, and I think that a lot of, for me, character stuff is more impactful, and I enjoy that stuff more in my old age than just strictly just plot and let's go from point A to point B through the plot. I kind of like the journey of traveling with characters and living with characters and seeing sort of Rick Dalton's sort of his decline from the heights that he had whenever he was on the Western to moving into being sort of kind of washed up and then coming back and getting a role as a villain, like the villain of the week on a new Western. It's interesting to see all that stuff. I know it doesn't really actually connect totally to the end of the film. And it just is happenstance that they run into sort of the Manson family.
It's definitely not, you know, like an A to B to C, but it was cool essentially just seeing a bunch of vignettes of, you know, what Cliff and Rick are doing at different times. And I think it really came across that Quentin Tarantino really wanted to use this as an excuse to, man, I really want to shoot one of those old 60s cigarette commercials.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to put it in this movie.
Yeah.
And, like, it was really just, I knowing a little bit about, Quentin Tarantino and, you know, that era of, like, filmmaking that he loves, of course, and, you know, there's, you know, the grindhouse theme, you know, is in there briefly, you know, before the drive-in scene. And, like, all that stuff was really cool, but, yeah, like, I thought it was going to be one, you know, like, it is one complete movie, but I thought everything was going to have a little bit more to do with everything else, because through all the production and leading up to it, they're like, oh, they cast this guy's Charles Manson, and he's going to play Charles Manson in this other thing, and he's in it for one scene. Like, I don't even think he's on screen for two full minutes.
You have to know that that's Charles Manson to even know that that's what's going on.
Right. Yeah, it's
like, you have to be aware of, this movie is set in this time period, and that's who this person is, and Margot Robbie plays this role, and that's logically who this dude would be.
Yeah, I think to get the complete emotional punch from this movie, you need to know the real life story.
Yeah.
You need to know, like, what happened. But I thought it was very good. So, like, I think I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, what Tarantino movie do I want to watch the least? Like, which one? What is the one that, like, I don't really have any desire to go back to? And sacrilegious as it may be, it's probably Reservoir Dogs. Like, I feel like I watched that once. I got everything out of it that I could get out of it, and that's it.
There's the least action that happens in that too. Like, there's the least amount of things that happen.
Yeah.
It's essentially, you know, one set piece. It's essentially really just them in the warehouse for most of the movie.
And I know,
so I don't think that that's sacrilege. It's not a bad movie, but once you've seen it a couple of times, you've seen it.
Yeah, and like I know, you know, Jackie Brown gets put to the bottom of the list a lot, but I feel like there's enough twists and turns in the plot with all the different characters that you're going to watch Jackie Brown a couple times and you're going to come away with different things that maybe you missed the first or second viewing.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to think that I've watched it. I originally watched Jackie Brown in the theaters back in the 90s, and then I recently watched it again probably in the past couple of years, and I liked it.
Yeah.
Not very much both times. So that's the one that I would least like to go back and revisit.
Yeah, I think Pulp Fiction and Django are still my favorites, but this is really good. I like these characters a lot. Like, I'd be all on board to just give me another story with Cliff Booth and Rick Dalton.
Yeah. I don't like Django that much. It's fine, but I'm definitely more of a, you know, the Kill Bills are definitely more speed. I like Inglourious Bastards a whole lot. So those would be the
you're right,
the
I forgot about
I like more.
The Kill Bills. Kill Bill 1 is definitely my second favorite. Matt, what do you think about anything we've just said for the last 10 minutes?
I hear you.
Everyone thought very this cool. was a two-man booth.
It was. Surprise! It's Matt! He's saving up his energy. He's got to do some heavy lifting later on in the episode.
So, you know, I'm happy to be all on board, all caught up. Very enjoyable run of films this man, Quentin Tarantino, makes. So, Matt, do you want to talk? You want to get into a little Mando Minute? Talk a little Mandalorian episode 3?
Yeah, we could do that for a minute.
Was it, I think this was directed by Bryce Dallas Howard?
Yes. The Bryce Dallas Howard that is responsible for,
oh my God,
the single worst live action Star Wars anything we have ever seen since the holiday special.
Which one's that?
It was, I don't know what the name of the episode
was
from season one.
It was the Hercules episode.
The Hercules episode. Yeah. Maybe Xena. Maybe it might have been a slight upgrade to a Xena. But yeah, that.
Did she redeem herself at all in being able to tell a better Star Wars story?
I feel like yes. I felt like this one felt much more otherworldly. It didn't feel like it was shot in your backyard, Paul.
Yeah, right.
And that in and of itself is very important, I think. And so, I don't know.
And that'll do it. That's the Mando Minute, ladies and gentlemen.
Did you time it? All right.
Well, all right. So cool.
So Matt came to us tonight with new George Lucas, new details out of the George Lucas camp about what George Lucas would do with his own sequel trilogy, and Matt seems to think this is going to carry us for another 50 minutes.
It could.
We may get Mando Minute Part 2 later on.
the Mando Minutes.
But like Ian, you said like we heard about
what
this.
What were the minutes of last week's?
Let me review the minutes of our meeting.
Yeah, Ian, you thought we heard about this, and we probably did, and I forgot what the details are. So I'm on board. Like I'm ready to hear some new stuff.
There's a book coming out in December called
How Disney Fucked Me.
The Star Wars Archives. George Lucas. The Star Wars Archives 1999 to 2005. Mm-hmm. And it's written by Paul Duncan. I guess he did a first volume of it that chronicled the original trilogy, and it gives you a lot of like kind of behind the scenes insight. And this one obviously focuses on the prequels, but there's some new interviews with George Lucas, and he kind of reveals what his plan for the sequel trilogy would have been. I kind of take all this with a grain of salt, considering how many things George Lucas has said over the years that kind of like wasn't true. And I feel like he's a pretty well-documented individual, so it's not hard to find him contradicting himself like a lot over the years. But take it for what it is. His trilogy would have been, I think, exceptionally different from the one that we got. And not only that, you guys can let me know what you think, but I kind of think this would have been better. It seems like the trilogy would have focused more on Luke, Han, and particularly Leia. Leia would have been the central character, her and her grandchildren. Or, I'm sorry, her children. Darth Vader's grandchildren. Who they are, they don't really seem to get into, but Leia is trying to rebuild the Republic, and she eventually takes on the role of the Supreme Chancellor and trying to rebuild democracy after the Empire.
So this takes place about 20 years after Jedi.
Well, it seems like it's a very longer-spanning trilogy. It sounds as if, because the way Lucas put it, it starts a few years after Return of the Jedi, when there's just a handful of Jedi that are still in existence out in the galaxy that Luke is trying to bring together and reform the Jedi Order. Who knows? But that's what Luke is trying to do when the trilogy starts. And by the end, he has populated the Jedi into the galaxy. And he, I think Lucas indicated that 20 years later or something like that. So it's a long spanning trilogy. Again, it's not like this very rigid outline that he provides. It almost sounds like he's just sort of talking off the cuff. Sort of like he's making it up as he goes. Which is great, because that's
to do,
or as Disney did. And we have seen how that turned out, but, Lucas would have made Leia the main character, and the most interesting thing is, by the end of the trilogy, Leia is the chosen one. Not Anakin, not Luke, Leia is. I'm like, oh, that's pretty interesting. That's cool. Because he said the first trilogy is going to deal with the father, the second trilogy is the son, and the third trilogy is the daughter. And I could get behind that. This is the most interesting part. The villain of the trilogy would have been Darth Maul. Darth Maul, as we know, lived in the Clone Wars, but he, I guess he takes control of the underworld syndicate that kind of spans the galaxy. The Hutts are involved, and there's all kinds of horrible gangsters and cartels and stuff.
Maybe he'd call it Red Dawn?
Perhaps. I don't know how similar this kind of stuff lines up with Lucas's, what he wanted to do, but clearly Darth Maul did become something of a crime boss.
Yeah.
And he had his own apprentice, who was Darth Talon. Now, for you comic book nerds out there, Darth Talon was that red Twi'lek chick from the Star Wars Legacy comics. And she was going to be kind of the Darth Vader. So you would have sort of Maul as sort of the Emperor type role, because there's a power vacuum on the bad guy side.
I guess we don't know how long Darth Maul's species can live. So, this works.
Yeah, I mean, Lucas even said he would have been very old. I mean, he wouldn't have been that old. He was probably Obi-Wan's age, right?
And yeah, I'd say he was probably 25, 30 when he died.
Yeah, and
when he got shortened.
you're right.
So I think it's within the realm of possibility that he still was alive. And whatever, that's fine. I think to give the fans more Darth Maul is a good thing. It would be recognizing one of the kind of the unfortunate blunders of the prequel movies was killing off Darth Maul so early, if you could bring him back and have him do some really cool stuff, that might be a nice, I don't know, reconciliation, I guess. But that's kind of the general outline of what he wanted to do. Obviously, it's vastly different. I didn't hear anything about Deadbeat Dads or Disenfranchised Jedi Knights or anything like that. It sounds like it's a legitimate continuation of the story, not a reboot the way that The Force Awakens was. This was the sequel to Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And to me, I like that. I like that so much better.
This Darth Talon chick's got to get a fucking coat or something on here.
Yeah, they might have had to clothe her a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Disney would have a heart attack
You think about it, though, she came slightly after the era in which Aayla Secura was created. Aayla Secura was the blue Jedi Twi'lek chick who started in the comics, and then George Lucas has a thing for those Twi'leks. He created her for real, put her in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of scantily clad, too. Not quite as much as Darth Talon, but still. As we know, Twi'leks don't like to wear clothing.
They have an allergic reaction.
Stripper planet. That's right. They have an allergic reaction to fabric, I think.
I believe so as well.
Those Jedi robes just... They just leave rashes. Eww. Yeah.
Good luck finding a picture of her that's not filthy. It's like Frank Cho's responsible for her entire Google image gallery.
So, yeah, guys, I think it would have been cool to see what happens next in the story, not an obvious and clear deconstruction of what we already loved. It kind of breaks my heart that this was the idea from the creator. It's very difficult for me to even like reconcile the fact that the guy that created Star Wars is still alive and he still wants to tell the stories. He thought he was going to tell his story and Disney tricked him. I mean, they did.
They didn't trick him.
They did.
He sold it. It wasn't
right.
a trick.
They tricked him
with billions of dollars. Oh, no. Oops. I fell into Scrooge McDuck's fucking thing.
That Brinks truck in front of his house wasn't a mirage.
Oh, no.
It was really there.
No, but with the caveat.
It wasn't a force illusion.
With the caveat that his outlines were going to be the basis for the movies. There was nothing. There was no contract to that fact. Bob Iger did let him know that we might do our own thing. I want you to know that. But I still think for whatever reason, Lucas believed that his outline and his influence were still going to be all over the movies. I don't think I would have trusted Disney. Well, I wouldn't have either, but
Somebody pays you $1 billion for something, they can do whatever the fuck they want with it.
I'm not saying that they can't do what they did, even though clearly that was the wrong fucking thing.
I don't think that there was any appetite for George Lucas Star Wars after the prequels.
I think
you had to refresh the brand for better or for worse.
It's so funny because the sequels have supplanted people's hatred of the things that they hate for Star Wars, and now the prequel movies are aging quite well. I disagree with that.
I think that there are two different camps of people that have equal amounts of vitriol for both.
Yeah.
I feel like the amount of people that hated the prequels is less now, and they're starting to come around on those, or at the very least
I think they're less vocal.
I don't think they're less vocal. I think they recognize them. I mean, there's still people that hate them, but there are people that did hate them that are like, well, now that I've seen what the sequels were, which was just a bad retelling of the originals, now I see the prequels as, well, at least George was trying to do something different. He was at least trying to do something that wasn't like...
There's a definite, direct continuity from the sequels to the original trilogy, which isn't quite apparent from the originals to the sequel. So I think, in that regard...
I don't know what you just said.
The prequel trilogy has a direct connection to the originals. The connection between the originals and the sequel trilogy is a lot more nebulous. So I think in that regard, the prequels feel a lot more natural. So in that way, yes, they will be looked more favorably on because feel.
I think I agree with you, but like, can you explain that a little bit? Why you think that there's more cohesion between the prequel and original trilogy versus the original and sequels?
The way the story was told is that you weren't stepping on Han, Luke, and Leia's toes. Like, you weren't rewriting characters or like taking liberties with their personalities or what they would do and would not do. And that's, as much as I don't like it, it is all based on the writer and what the writers wanted to do with it, and they took them in directions that I vehemently disagree with. But George Lucas's prequels didn't affect any of that. And your C-3PO stuff and your weirdness, but for the most part, the bulk of the story lines up. Like, at the end of Revenge of the Sith, we're going in the direction we need to go in. Like, they're on, you know, Tanavee, Leia's with Bail Organa, Luke gets dumped on Tatooine. Weird stuff like, well, probably shouldn't be called Skywalker anymore. Maybe don't ever say that name again. But the story is still, it's all along the right path. Like, nothing mm-hmm. infringes on what came before it. Whereas the sequel trilogy is just like stepping on all kinds of toes and rankling, yeah. you know, all kinds of feathers for what people want to see and what people expect. And like, and I think those two points for me go really hand in hand, why the prequels and originals feel together and the sequel trilogy doesn't.
Yeah. I feel like that's a big part of why I'm kind of able, because I feel like a lot of Star Wars fans kind of pick and choose. They have headcanon, as it's called, their own personalized version of what is real official Star Wars. For me, it's 1 through 6. I kind of throw, there's aspects of 7, 8, and 9 that I like, but overall, I think the story is just too fucking depressing and more a disappointment than an enjoyment or excitement or anything like that. So to me, I just want to pretend that, well, I don't really need to pretend. It's fan fiction, essentially. It's very high budget fan fiction. And as long as the guy that created Star Wars is alive and he has his version of what the story is, it's not like the dude is senile. Maybe he is selling Star Wars to Disney, but like, he's still capable. He's still a storyteller, or it's not like he's dead and somebody's obviously going to make Star Wars since he's not here anymore. But as long as he's still there and he wants to tell stories, it's very difficult for me to accept anything.
So my rebuttal question is, and I'm not sure like if he's actually really done anything in this regard, but like, doesn't Frank Miller keep trying to go back to the well with that Dark Knight stuff, and everything he does currently is terrible? Like, maybe he had his time and that's it, and he shouldn't make any more.
Yeah, he went in like 2001. He did that Dark Knight Returns kind of sequel that was pretty bad. I think his storytelling is a little bit off, and his artistry. We know that artists, I think they have only so much time.
Right.
And it seems like he ran out of time.
And storytelling-wise, like writer-wise, sure, you've got a much, much longer leash, you know, a lot more time to really hone that craft and do things. But I also feel like, in a way, you still run out of time as a writer, and you're not mm-hmm. really going to be able to deliver what you did when you struck gold in 77.
Yeah.
So, like, these ideas may be great, but, I mean, what's George Lucas's execution going to be at this point? Like, we saw the execution with the prequels, and, like, I know, like, Every time I talk with someone about the prequels, it's the standard is the standard. Clone stinks. Phantom Menace stinks. Everyone loves Sith. Like, that's what I get. That hasn't changed. Since those movies come out, every time I talk with someone, that's what they say. The sequel trilogy hasn't changed that. I get the same opinions about those three movies from everybody. And maybe there's a chance that George will be able to go back to some of the old stomping grounds, you know, maybe bring on, you know, JJ as a consulting producer just for, you know, the more of the practical effects and ground everything a little more, but still, you know, use George's outline and scripts. And
I don't think
they're not going to do any of that. Like,
no, well,
you know what
I mean? Had
like,
they?
No, but I don't mean exactly J.J. Abrams, but bring in someone to help shepherd the process.
Lucas
so
wasn't
going to
direct these anyway. He was never going to direct them. Whether he's because he was developing Star Wars when he sold it to Disney, but he wasn't actually going to be the one to direct whatever these ended up being. I think he was going to work as a, you know, as the writer of the story and I'm sure serve as like an executive producer, sort of an overseer of the project.
So whenever we first brought this up this morning, the article that I remember us talking about or reading or having a conversation about was something from late December last year where he was talking about an idea that he had for the sequel trilogy to be sort of all based on the midichlorians and a microscopic world.
Yeah.
I thought that's so there are two competing ideas that
Ant-Man
he had.
Was going to be in it.
One was, Paul was all in for...
He was going to navigate through Luke's blood.
Yeah, Paul was all in for the Paul Rudd-averse.
Yeah, I think, and I could be wrong...
Rudd Wars?
Because Lucas has a tendency to say conflicting things, but I kind of never really took that whole midichlorian microbial level storytelling at face value.
But what if this is his way of pulling the old switcheroo on Disney where he's dropping these breadcrumbs and he's like, oh, it's going to be about Darth Maul and Leia. And then they get into production. He's like, psych, bitch, I'm doing midichlorians. Then we're all going to be very mad.
Yeah. Well, I kind of feel like some of that is more either larger kind of picture or sort of metaphorical, but I don't think that we were going to see amoebas with lightsabers fighting each other. I don't think that ever...
What makes you think that? Because that's kind of what he's saying, is that it was going to be that world, not
read
with
the
lightsabers.
Quote. Read the quote.
Let's find exactly what was said.
I mean, you guys both know they haven't figured out how to make lightsabers that tiny yet.
Very true.
They'd clearly just be fist fighting amoeba.
Vamp while I'm looking.
So, Paul, would you have preferred this trilogy that we're talking about tonight over the one that you got?
Knowing the one that I got, yeah.
Anything, like, right? It's worth a shot, right?
Like, I don't want to be one of these old men that hates the sequel trilogy, but I honestly feel like I don't like it because of the way it was built and told. I also don't like the deadbeat dad Han Solo. I don't like, you know, Luke like denying anyone he ever cared about. Like, I hate that stuff, but even if, like, I think just what drives me most crazy is the slapdash nature of this whole fucking thing. Like, we're in a time when Marvel is able to string together 20 fucking movies that all make sense with each other, and you can't do three? Like, you're just rolling the dice every time it's time to get up and start pre-production, and it's a fucking mess. They don't line up. They're not even. Like, by the end, like, it's a fucking slap fight between JJ and Rian Johnson. Like, and it ruins what could have been three really good characters with a lot of potential.
Given the trilogy to one or the other of those two, it would have been better.
Probably.
it would have been better, regardless of how, like, would, if Rian Johnson got to create the whole trilogy, would there have been so many subverted expectations because he wouldn't feel like he had to, like, put his own stamp on it, like he felt like he had to do with the second one, because I can't just pick up where the last one left off. It has to be kind of my version of it.
Here's the quote. The next three Star Wars films were going to get into a microbial world, he told Cameron. There's this world of creatures that operate differently than we do. We call them the Wills, and the Wills are the ones who actually control the universe. They feed off the Force.
Mm-hmm. To me, that sounds like they're going to explain the midichlorians a little bit further. I do not think that we were going to see the actual creatures fighting under the lens of a microscope.
What it makes me think of are those ridiculous light and dark avatars from Rebels or Clone Wars.
Oh, that was the what was that called? The trilogy.
Dumb.
The
dumb trilogy.
Oh God, what is it called? Mortis, the Mortis trilogy.
Ugh, Mortis. Can everyone hear me roll my eyes? Ugh.
And many people consider that A-level Star Wars storytelling. I think it's fucking terrible. But then again, I am incredibly lukewarm on the Clone Wars, which is also the temperature of the inside of a Tauntaun.
I like letting people figure things out on their own. Like, I don't need to know scientifically why Luke can lift rocks and Han can't. Like, just it just is.
It's
just a thing. It's the same reason I don't need to know who the fuck Boba Fett is. He's just a badass guy that shows up in a cool costume and then he's out. That's it. Like, I don't need to know the backstory. Like, I don't need to know the backstory about Wolverine. He's the best he is at what he does. That's enough. That's all I need to know. Like, I don't need, like, story and story and story. And, like, I don't need every stone unturned to, like, figure this stuff out. Use your fucking imagination, Star Wars nerds. If you want this fucking shit explored and explored, use your fucking imaginations. Because
write your own
no one owes
fiction,
us
you fucks.
Any of that.
Well, I feel like most Star Wars fans aren't clamoring for an explanation of that. This is just something that George Lucas seemed to really be fixated on.
Yeah, but if a lot of fans like that Mortis trilogy, like,
I guess,
yuck, gross. Same with finding, like, the time travel tunnels at the end of Rebels. Like, ooh, like this, ooh, like it just, the more details you have about what the Force is, paints you closer into a corner.
Yeah,
about what you can do with the Force.
Yeah, I agree with that. I still think that that's a little bit different, though, than continuing to expand on midichlorians.
I'm more open to, you know, like, mythology.
Right.
And, you know,
just
like,
keep it,
just soul aspects.
Right,
but
keep it vague. And
but when you're like, well, Han Solo only has a zero count, but Luke Skywalker has 70,000. That's why Luke Skywalker can see into
right,
the future.
These are like suddenly Pokemon cards.
I'm like, oh, God. God, someone fucking shoot this guy.
Luke Skywalker is a 7-4 quad.
What's really funny is the listenership of the McSauce podcast is like, hey!
Is he making fun of me? Is he making fun of me?
Yes. Is he making fun of me?
It's got to be making fun of someone else, right?
Says the three nerds that have a podcast.
No, it's fucking you. We're making fun of you. You know who you are.
Star Wars.
Ian, would you have preferred this trilogy?
At this point, I'd prefer for Star Wars not to exist. Like, I don't want. I don't want that trilogy. At this point, I don't want the trilogy that we got. Like, I don't. Honestly, I don't care. It's at the point where I pick and choose. It's the same way that I interact with my comic books, which is, hey, if it's terrible and it stinks, maybe it didn't happen. It's not the story that I cherish, so it's fine. That's where I'm at with this at this point.
Yeah, I think I would have enjoyed. I mean, it's so hard saying I would have enjoyed this George Lucas outline better because who the fuck knows? But I don't know. Just based on what he's already done, even if they wind up not being great, I feel like he would have. I think he would have delivered a reverence for the characters that I was looking for that I didn't quite get from the sequel trilogy.
My thing is also that it doesn't totally matter that he came up with Star Wars and he wrote a big chunk of the story. And even though he's still alive and he has stories to tell, that's fine. But there are a lot of creators out there that have created properties and written a lot of them. And then other creators have taken those properties in not only different directions, but better directions. So it doesn't bother me or concern me that like he still has a story to tell. That's great. I'm more interested in other people's story to tell. Now, the problem is that people...
Some of them are Bryce Dallas Howard. Some of them are girls.
The problem is that so many people feel beholden to what the idea, quote, air quotes, of Star Wars is, or what is Star Wars to certain people, that they don't venture outside and tell just a cool-ass story set in the Star Wars universe. So that's where I think Star Wars gets into trouble, and I don't know if it'll ever get out of its own way for these creators to really expand and go further, because even in something like The Mandalorian, where we have some different storytelling and people are doing some different things, we still got fucking lightsabers and we still got fucking Jedi, and why don't we do some different shit?
That's I haven't seen a single lightsaber in Mandalorian. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure we'll be getting them.
Maybe you're watching a different show.
You didn't watch the Darksaber? Is that not a lightsaber?
I'm pretty sure it says Darksaber. I said lightsaber.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you understand what I'm saying. There are still Jedi in that universe. There are still...
Yeah, we're still going to see Ahsoka.
We still talk about Jedi. The thrust of this season, Matt, is the search for Jedi.
Do not push your glasses up your fucking nose and tell me that Ahsoka renounced the Jedi Order. So, well, technically, she's not really a Jedi anymore.
So
they're still out there. Force users are still available. Readily available in the bullpen.
And what I want to know, are we going to see Luke in The Mandalorian?
Do you want to see Luke in The Mandalorian?
There's some curiosity. I don't know if I want to. I kind of do, in a sense, because I'd maybe like to see the Luke that we all sort of expected we would get in the sequel movies and didn't get, outside of when he was a hologram for 2 seconds. And I feel like if they did introduce a Luke, he would be much more in line with what hardcore fans sort of expect.
And
that would be kind of cool, but it would be disappointing in a sense. It's like, oh, that's so cool. But that doesn't change the fact that we got not a very good version.
Well, I think it would be redeeming if, say, we got, you know, Mando and the baby in a jam, an impossible jam to get out of, and our favorite hero, Luke Skywalker, somehow comes and saves them. I think that would be pretty. If they could somehow keep that shit under wraps, people would lose their fucking
How would
minds.
They do that? Would they?
I don't know.
Would they get a younger actor, or would they do the whole
you probably have
de-aging
to de-age.
Thing?
Just do,
yeah, I think
just
de-age.
Do Sebastian Stan. He's close enough.
Well, they have that.
The age. The age is kind of right. Like, I don't want to see. I don't want to see, like, fake plastic Leia CGI face.
No.
De-age, like, in Avengers, whenever they de-age.
Yes, we are.
And the same thing Tron Legacy, when they de-aged Jeff Bridges for that whole fucking movie, and it looked pretty good.
What about the deep fake things that we've been seeing? Like, you saw the...
Luke would have to put some more clothes on.
Right. But you saw the Solo thing where they put Harrison Ford's face over top of
Alden Ehrenreich. Ehrenreich.
Him. And it looked really good. Of course, it didn't sound right, but like, I'm sure you can get like a voice double or something.
They could probably get Mark Hamill do the de-aging on him, and it probably would look pretty good.
Maybe like kind of...
Same thing with Samuel L. Jackson in Captain Marvel. That looked pretty fucking
cool. That would be really cool.
I think that's much less steps from getting 2020 Mark Hamill to 1983 Mark Hamill.
Well, this would be 1987 Mark Hamill.
Oh, big difference. Huge difference. And we all know black don't crack. That's why it was easy for them to do that with Samuel L. Jackson. I would rather
Is it five years after Jedi? Yeah.
I think it's somewhere between 5 and 8 years.
Yeah.
But like ultimately, if Luke Skywalker shows up...
It wouldn't get the same
bump
if they recast it and it's Sebastian Stan, I'm like, I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
But if it's Mark Hamill, even de-aged, I would be in. It
depends how goofy that's going to look.
It wouldn't be Luke Skywalker. See, that's the thing. At this point, it wouldn't. I don't think that we would feel like it would be Luke Skywalker.
Regardless, if Luke Skywalker shows up in The Mandalorian, I'm like, who the fuck cares about The Mandalorian? Keep the camera on this guy. Show me what this guy's going to do. Like, fuck this. Like, let's go. And if like he comes to get them out of a jam, but he leaves Baby Yoda with Mandalorian, that seems unlikely.
Maybe that's who they deliver the baby to.
Right.
Maybe that's the end of the fucking series.
Right. Finding Ahsoka is like one step in the way or whatever.
So then
Disney
has to explain how Kylo Ren murdered Baby Yoda.
Well, I mean, Luke murdered Baby Yoda. Everybody knows that.
Wait, Luke did it?
Baby Yoda ate one.
Ryan Johnson's Luke.
He ate one too many last of a generation eggs, and Luke was like, "Ah, in the middle of the night, I'm gonna kill him."
While he was sleeping, he looks so cute in that little basket thing. And Luke walks up to him, he's like, and he actually does it because he didn't wake up to block the lightsaber.
We see it. There's green blood everywhere. Man, I would Disney, please. Please. Yeah, like I don't want Luke in this. But Ian, going back to something you said a little bit ago, I do like that Mandalorian is letting us explore a bunch of different worlds and a bunch of different things. You know, we talk all the time about some of these episodes just feel like one-offs, but you know, that Xena episode was a part of the Star Wars universe. Sure. It looked like Endor with water with some ponds. But it was part of the Star Wars universe we haven't seen before. I loved in this last episode seeing, you know, fishing village, seeing like space.
You know what I really liked about
space,
that episode?
I loved
space Norfolk, Virginia,
the deadliest Star Wars.
I liked that. It was clear like what planet you were on because of all the inhabitants were the same. They were like all the same squid face or whatever.
Quarren.
I think they're actually called the Quarren.
And what the Mon Calamari or the Admiral Ackbars?
Yeah, there was like a little bit less of them, but they were all kind of hanging out. I just thought that was really a cool touch because like everywhere else seems so integrated all the time. But like seeing more of the home world of those creatures that you've seen sporadically here and there, I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, and like so, like like Ian was saying, like I like this part of the Mandalorian that it is allowing us to see different parts of the Star Wars universe, and you know we're being able to tell different stories without necessarily using lightsabers or the Force or familiar things. Ian, I think would you be mad if like now Mando's running with the Jedi? Running with the Jedi.
I don't want him to be running with the Jedi, but if the Jedi come and save him, then I think that would probably fit into the story that they're telling.
And it's got to be Luke. I don't like this without it being Luke.
Well, it's gonna be
If that's the way that the story goes, it like I don't give a fuck about Ahsoka. The only Jedi that I would care about would be Luke.
Do we like that? That it's so many references to the cartoon at this point.
I don't know. I didn't really watch the cartoon at all.
Yeah.
So I guess it feels detached for me. Unless it's really the movies, I'm like,
was kind of neat seeing live action Bo-Katan played by the same girl that voiced her in the Clone Wars.
Okay,
like it was pretty
neat.
Isn't
that I'm sorry. Isn't that character Obi-Wan's age?
No, Obi-Wan was in love with her mother or something.
Oh, okay. So she's just okay.
Yeah.
Whew. Because I thought they were supposed to be the same age, and I was like,
I'm not understanding. No, definitely not.
Okay, thank you.
But yeah, like it was kind of cool, and like seeing like that helmet design show up in live action, and like the voice is the same. And I'm not ride or die Clone Wars. Like, you know, I watched all of it, but even just having the passing knowledge I had, it was kind of neat. But at the same time, I'm like I've always been over the Mandalorians, like even through all that all the Clone Wars business and the Siege of Mandalore and all this stuff, I'm like, they're overrated. Like I can't get into them. I think the Mandalorian is cool. I like the idea of, you know, Lone Wolf and Cub, you know, the one man gunslinger and his piece of shit ship.
What,
you know, trying to make it
shit
through the galaxy.
I love how shitty.
It's more of a piece of shit every episode.
Those fucking Mon Calamari just like tape that shit back together.
Yeah.
It looks like garbage.
Yeah.
But that's great. That's what's great.
Well,
the thing that I don't like about The Mandalorian is too many. The name of the show is The Mandalorian.
Singular.
Not all them Mandalorians. Like, I fucking hate it. I hate all the different Mandalorians.
That old Nickelodeon show, all them.
All
them Mandalorians.
It's all them Mandalorians. All them Mandos.
Yeah,
it's too many. Like, I fucking love him, but I wish it was, I wish it was more special. I wish it was just like, oh, holy shit, it's a Mandalorian. Not just like, oh, they're fucking everywhere. We have Mandalorians coming out of our assholes.
Yeah, and like, I did like this episode how they explain like the different religious factions, because, you know, he shows up and he's like, holy fuck, you took your helmet off. And they're
psychopaths.
We're not fucking
don't.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And Katie Sackhoff's like, don't you wish you had this screen time, this barefaced screen time like I do?
And he's like, not really, because I just do voiceover work. Don't tell anybody.
I do love that they're not backing away from how fucked up his ship's getting. Like, whenever the X-Wings had to pull him out of the thing, I thought for sure they were going to be like, oh, you know, we have a cruiser above us, you know, we'll like get you patched up and on your way. Like, I thought they were going to gloss over, like, how the fuck are you going to fix this? This shit got smashed by a giant spider. And they're not turning away from it. They're not glossing over it. They're like, oh, yeah, like, the ship's fucked. Like, we have to, like, all pee in the same cockpit for, like, days until we get to this, you know, calamari planet.
Yeah, that's a thing. Like, if you got to use the fucking John, you better do it now because you'll be peeing in space.
Yeah.
Just a little note for next week's Mando Minute. Carl Weathers is the director of next week's episode.
Holy,
I'm pretty stoked.
What has Carl Weathers directed before?
I don't know.
Did he direct Action Jackson?
I have no idea.
I just love him so much.
I heard about this on Fat Man Beyond, and they listed the couple things he directed. But yeah, I was like, wait, we're gonna let Carl Weathers direct this?
I guess that means he's gonna be in the episode.
I'd imagine so, right?
What's his name in the show?
Grief Karga.
Grief Karga.
Grief Griff.
Yeah.
Griff.
Something.
Griff, isn't that from
Grief?
Back to the Future?
Grief Karga.
Biff Karga. Biff is from Back to the
Biff
Future.
Biff Karga.
Griff Karga.
There was
Griff Tannen.
There was the youngest one from Part 2.
Oh, what? That's
was
a real
his
thing.
Name Griff.
Biff's son was named Griff.
It was his grandson.
His grandson is Griff.
Griff.
Oh. Yeah, and then Mad Dog Tannen from
the
Wild
West. That would
Wild
be the great,
West.
Forgot
great,
about
great,
Mad
great
Dog
grandfather.
Tannen.
Yeah. Carl Weathers has directed an episode of Hawaii Five-0.
How was
ooh,
that?
Ooh, boy. Then we're getting dicey. 18 Wheels of Justice, Strong Medicine.
Oh, I loved Strong Medicine.
He directed eight episodes.
The sequel to Weak Medicine.
In the prequel to Bad Medicine. He directed eight episodes of Silk Stockings. Fucking
fuck
yes.
Yes. Yes, you know what we're seeing in this episode. Butts. we're seeing basic cable nudity in this next episode.
Nice. I can't wait. So, yeah, that's exciting times for next week's Mando Minute.
Man, why can't I think of Mandalorian's name? What's that actor's name?
Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal. I was going to see. We're not going to see him without a helmet, but we will see him.
Without pants.
That'll do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Matt Cassell. Oh, yeah, that's right. You're supposed to say your own name.
Matt Cassell.
We'll see you next time.